When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Honest Field Guide Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to winning in entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Ginger Birkenbuehl. I'm the CEO of Burke Creative, a leadership, brand strategy, and visual identity agency dedicated to helping scale brands and assist with their adaptability with the market. On my show, you get to eavesdrop in on intimate conversation with business leaders and inspired entrepreneurs designed to give you tips and strategies so your own business can thrive. Subscribe and join me each week for laughter, inspiration, and honest stories. Everybody, welcome back to my show, the Honest Field Guide Podcast. I am Ginger Birkenbuehl, and I'm so excited that you're here today again. Thank you for joining. You could be anywhere in the world, of course, because everything is available virtually and remotely. So thank you so much for coming to see and listen to my show. I cannot wait to bring on my guests. But before I do that, I'd love for you to like my show, subscribe to the show, share my show with other people, the Honest Field Guide Podcast. Do everything you can, because not only does it help me, you know, get more people to my show, but it also helps my guest, right? And that's really what we're here for. We're here to talk about all the amazing things that my guest is going to bring today. And I cannot wait to bring this person on because, oh my God, this person has changed my life. I have to tell you, I had no idea that this person was going to have such a huge impact on my life and my career. And also even be like my whisperer, my Sherpa, right? So I today am highlighting a public relations superstar. Literally, she is a superstar. And I'm sure you've heard podcasts before with other PR people or other PR stuff, but this is not going to be like that show, right? This person that I'm going to be talking to, she has interviewed some of the most iconic brands in the world, and they're mostly creative ones, including myself. She's worked for me. And I wanted to bring this professional to my show because not only did she deliver to my agency, Burke Creative, what I wanted, but she actually gave me what I needed. And that's really like the big difference, right? I mean, she gave me what I needed. So, but I first have to kind of tell a little funny story around how I even met this person, because it's like, it's really a roundabout way. And it really does take me back, you know, to when I was in college. I mean, if you can believe that, to college, my college days, you know. When I was a student, I was a superstar student. I'm not gonna lie. I'm just gonna admit it. I'm gonna own it. When I was a student in school studying branding and strategy and design, I was a superstar. And I had this mentor at the time, my teacher. She was someone that, were it not for her, I may not have made it through college. Her name was Connie Goldman, and she encouraged me when I was at school as a junior and a senior. She encouraged me all the time to enter my work in a contest. And this is way before, I'm dating myself, this is way before social media was bananas. And entering contests was actually pretty critical to your career if you were in the creative business. You had to enter things and get your work in magazines. And so, you know, one of the magazines I entered was called How Magazine. It was How International Design. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll throw something in there. How am I going to get in here? What does this mean? What does it mean? I didn't know. I was a kid. But the really crazy thing is, when I entered into this competition, because of the, you know, the recommendation from my teacher, Connie Goldman, thank God, God for her. God bless her. I don't even know where she is now. I wish I did. I'd like to give her a hug and a kiss. But I won. And not only did I win once, but I won several times. I entered several different things in that competition, and I won multiple times. And back then, I was an entrepreneur. Yes, I was. I was a marketer. I was a businesswoman. And I was very explicit. I said, you know what? This is like a big deal for me to be winning all these competitions. I sent a letter to the editor of How Magazine at the time, and her name was Bryn Muth. And I thanked her. I said, you know, this publication is beautiful. I love it. Like, everybody thinks I'm great in college, you know, like, and, you know, fast forward, when I had these competitions on my resume, it was a huge deal. It got my foot in the door for jobs. That's really what it meant. So, you know, listen, that was a huge thing for me to have written a letter to the editor of Howl Magazine back at the time. But when I think about, you know, what actually happened after that, she remembered me. She invited me, Bryn Muth invited me to represent Howl Magazine in Chicago during the graphic design studio tour, which they used to have every year. And I was like, of course I'll do this. This would be great. And I was kind of innovative back then because I was working from home. You know, I was working from home. I had my first child and I had a really beautiful design office. And people that came in the office, they were all students. And they were just like, wow, you have like a full-fledged business like this? You have a kid? I'm like, yeah. This is what, yeah, what does this mean? You know, look at where we are today. I mean, think about this. Look at where we are today. And I'm not going to date myself because I'm not going to let anybody know how old I actually am. But back then, it was like people could not believe that I was running a big business from my house with a child under my foot in my house, right? So anyway, fast forward to later in my career, I actually worked with these two amazing PR women before I actually met this one person. And this is Micah Stambaugh. She has a company called TMI. And then I work with a woman named Nikki Robinson. She's got a company called Good Girl PR. But, you know, there was a time in my career when I realized I actually needed someone that had a deep, deep expertise in my creative space. Somebody that could understand me and everything I'd been through in the design, branding, advertising world, the marketing world. And I was like, how am I going to find somebody that has this information? Like, who has it? Like, what am I going to do? So you know what I did? This was like decades later. I thought, you know, I wonder, like, Bryn Muth, is she still around? I don't even know why I thought to ask her. But we were already connected on LinkedIn from years ago because that's my tool. My number one tool of business development and relationship development networking is LinkedIn as far as online is concerned. I sent her a message and the only two words that came out of her mouth, the only two words were Judy Calvin. And I was like, okay, who's Judy Calvin? Who's that? So anyway, I called Judy Calvin and I was like, okay, here we are. I need this thing. And I'll tell you right off the bat, we hit it off immediately, like immediately on the phone. I was like, okay, this woman, she is going to work for me, whether she knows it or not. Like at the time she wasn't even sure. She's like, well, wait, how do you know Bryn and what's going on here? And you know, I had to actually explain to her who I was and what I was looking for. And next thing you know, that's it. I mean, I hired her and it's like, I've never looked back. I mean, she's the person I go to for all of my public relations needs because she literally is a superstar. So since then she's helped me win international awards. I've garnered massive coverage in the industry, trade magazines, publications. She's trained me actually how to craft my authentic stories that are in my industry to make them align with my business goals. Now, that's the piece that I didn't really think about to the extent that she taught me. So Judy and her company, Calvin Public Relations, has consistently landed clients in top-tier press, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Reuters, Fast Company, Forbes, Time, Business Insider, USA Today, CNN, CNBC, CBS, and NPR Radio, as well as top industry trade professionals. And some of my work has ended up in those places, too, because of Judy. So listen, Judy, I know that was a long intro, but it's real. It's authentic. Welcome to my show, Judy.
Thank you, Ginger. That was quite an introduction. And I love the fact that you had to convince me to take you on as a client, which really never really happens.
You know what? I mean, I think the reason that happened is because it was such an unusual introduction, right? I mean, it was a woman who has a very long history of success. And you and I both know her in completely different worlds and completely different lanes of life. You know, and she's older than me. And, you know, this is a different generation. So I think you were like, how did this actually happen? Because it wasn't a typical lead generation, right? It wasn't like one of your clients referred me to you. It was like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, actually, that has happened quite often. She's actually, Bryn has been amazing. She's one of my favorite people that I've, you know, part of my network. She's recommended me to other agencies, including a Retail Voodoo that I worked with for a while. So, and I've actually even been recommended, honestly, by editors of magazines that agencies have asked. And one of them was Adweek magazine. A client had reached out to them and they told them to speak to me. So networking, as we know, as we both know, is extremely important in our industries.
Yeah. Well, I love hearing that. I think, you know, all hail to, you know, Bryn Muth.
Yes.
She's a queen. And now she's going to hopefully she'll get hit up with like 1,000, you know, messages now, because she's really like a central force. So anyway, listen, I want to get right into this. I want to start a little bit about the beginning. One of the things I love about you, Judy, is your New York accent. You know, I'm obsessed with New York. We talk about this all the time. I'm obsessed. So I want to know, did you grow up in New York? You know, I have such a mythology of New York. I think of like music, art, sex, Martin Scorsese, gritty. You know what I mean? I just have this mythology. Did you grow up in that city?
I did not grow up in the city. I grew up on Long Island. So that's where my accent comes from. And it has served me well in some ways, and it has also prevented me from entering certain types of professions, including radio, because I kept getting hit saying, you got to get rid of that Long Island accent. So, I grew up at a time when folks, my parents, were fleeing the cities and going to the suburbs. And that was the dream. You had to have a house in the suburbs. So I grew up on Long Island, very nice, you know, neighborhood, very middle class. You know, just had a real, you know, normal, basic childhood, you know, good schools. And, you know, just went from there with very, very, very traditional parents who thought that a woman, it was myself and my sister, and their idea was you need to go find a husband who's going to support you and have kids.
Wow.
And that was not in my playbook at all.
Did you have siblings? I don't know if you're an only child or not. We never talked about that.
No, I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me. Yeah, so okay. I was the youngest one.
So there's two of
rebel.
You. You were the rebel. Okay. So did you say your parents were traditional. Does that mean that your mother worked in the home and your father worked outside the home? Or did they both work? Or did they have a store? Or what was going on?
No, my father worked in an architectural firm, which is kind of sort of how I ended up sort of in that more designer space, creative space, I guess. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a traditional housekeeper for most of her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, a housekeeper, mm-hmm. not a housewife. Yeah.
Not a
I mean, you call, you're was, calling it a housekeeper. That's it. What?
Yeah. No, she was very traditional. She never wanted to work. You know, she came from a family that said women are not supposed to work. And I think finally, you know, unfortunately, she passed away very young. But toward the end, once I was out of the house and on my own, she finally did get some part-time work as a bookkeeper. That was it. Yeah.
That was it, huh? Wow. That's fascinating. I've not heard someone refer to a housekeeper versus housewife. I think that's, I mean, Neil Young has a song, you know, like he needs a maid, not a wife.
Exactly.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, for real, I need a maid. Yeah. Okay. So I just because I'm so fascinated a little bit with New York. So what has changed about New York from then to now, like in terms of the business and even in terms of like, you know, the what's happening, just the vibe of the city, business and then the vibe. Like, I feel like when I was there in New York before 9/11, it was different than it is now. But I know it's something's even changed even more since then. Do you have a way to capture that?
Yeah, well, in some ways. I mean, I worked as soon as I got out of college, I worked in the city. I worked for CBS. That was my first job out of school. I used to commute from Long Island on the Long Island Railroad, which was just a nightmare, and the subways. And, you know, that was a time when the city was pretty, I mean, I think I got mugged like 3 times. It was a tough place to navigate, but you know, it was also exciting and fun. So, enjoyed it as a single person. And it was, you know, it made you tougher, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it made us tougher. And it is definitely much different today. You know, I feel like it's much more, I guess, gentrified. It's also become really, really, really hard to afford to live in the city. It's you really have to be making a lot of money.
I mean, I feel like New York hasn't it always been like that, or no? It hasn't always been unaffordable. I feel like it's always been like this, like the top of the line in the United States.
It's never been easy to afford, but I think that it's, I think it's still, it's gotten harder and harder.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. So you went to elementary school, obviously, and you graduated from high school. Were you, like, you said you had a housekeeper mother. Were you kind of, what were you doing in elementary school and high school? Did you know you were a writer? Were you creative? Like, what was happening? Were you fighting against something, or what was going on?
Well, I always loved English. English was okay. Always my strength and my favorite. I mean, I was, to your point, I'm not going to lie, I was a great student. I was always an AA plus student. I excelled in pretty much everything, but English was what I loved. And I also had one English teacher who really inspired me, Mr. Hackett. And I worked in the English office. And I think that's what inspired me to find a way to build a career that involved something to do with English and, communications.
Okay. So. That's really beautiful. Yeah. I mean, the person that inspired me in high school was my stock teacher, the teacher that would teach me about stocks and finances. Like, if I knew then what I know now, seriously, if I knew then what I knew now, I would have never divested. I would have bought stock in Upjohn. I'd be a millionaire. But anyway, I love that. So where did you go to college?
I went upstate New York to a SUNY college, SUNY Oneonta. My parents didn't want me to go to college, and I was, like I said, the rebel. They really didn't value education that much, which was a little bit tough for me. I knew I wanted to go to college. I had a great curriculum and like I said, AA plus average. So they told me you can go to college as long as you become a teacher, because that's the only profession that is okay for a woman. So, and you got to remember, this was back, the time feminism was really on the rise. I was rebelling against them. So I said, fine, I'll go to SUNY Oneonta. It's a teaching school, and I'll be an English teacher. So that's what I did. I went up there, and after my first year, I realized I don't want to be a teacher. I love, literature and journalism. So I switched my major. I never told them that I switched my major. And I pursued that, and I got involved with, I started, working in areas where, like, I joined the radio station. They had a really, really robust radio station, the WONY. First, I just did news, then I became a DJ, and then I got an internship at a local radio station up there, and that's when the station manager kept yelling at me that if I was going to do news on the radio, I had to get rid of my Long Island accent.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the Midwestern accent is definitely, that's all the people that we have in the United States, pretty much on air everywhere.
Exactly.
Except for maybe Howard Stern.
Right.
I mean, he's like, he's like the only one that's kind of, but he's got a, he's different. I mean, he's a special kind of a genius. So he's kind of different. Interesting. So there was a lot going on politically and socially, and you decided then you were going to make your own way. You were kind of going against the tide of a lot of women. I mean, my mom also, she was in school and she became a teacher as well. And she was the only female in school. Everybody there was a man because they were all, trying to avoid the Vietnam War. So she was the only woman in the class. Yeah, it was crazy. She got her master's degree, and it was amazing in Chicago. Wow. So when you were in college then, and this is kind of something that I want to think about for the younger people, especially younger women that are interested in this career. How did you find your way there? Were you just looking up all the time, and were you talking to people? Did someone take your hand and guide you there? Or, I mean, were your spidey senses up? Were you just like, I got to figure something out because something is, I got to do something. Like, what was happening?
Well, I did have some really good professors, that helped. But I think working on the radio station, and then I actually, when I got my, I was very, like, I pushed into things, right? I think we all had to kind of push into things. So when I got in that internship, I literally, like, walked into this radio station and said, I want an internship. They're like, well, we don't have an internship program. I'm like, well, now you do. So and then the station manager was like, oh, wow, I can get somebody to work for me and I don't have to pay them. They're going to get credits for it. So he kind of liked that idea. And then next to the radio station was the office for the Binghamton Evening Press. And the reporter there, I got friendly with, and I said, look, I like to write. He said, do you want to be a stringer? Sure. So I started writing articles for the Binghamton Evening Press and getting them published. So I just kept sort of like trying things and pushing into things that I thought were interesting, so that when I finally graduated, I couldn't get a degree in journalism because they didn't offer it then, but I got a degree in literature and a minor in journalism. Mm-hmm. And I realized then I'm going to work in journalism. That's what I'm going to do.
So what did you do next? So you graduated with that degree with the minor. And then what did you do? You didn't go back home and you went to New York and got a job, or what happened?
I went back home. I started applying for jobs. I wanted to work at like small radio stations. That was my,
you were going to radio. Okay.
I wanted to go into radio. That was my dream. And I applied for some jobs. I actually got offered a job at one of the competitive radio station in Oneonta. But all of the stations that I ended up getting job offers from were in like the middle of nowhere. Like I was offered a job working up in Lake Placid at the Tupper Lake Bureau. And I thought to myself, all right, single woman from Long Island going all the way upstate where there's like 5 feet of snow most of the year. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. So I said, you know what? I'm going to try New York City. And at that time, obviously it was before computers came out, I went to some of these agencies and they said, can you type? I said, of course I can type. I've, been an English major. I type papers for everybody. I used to get paid for typing papers. So they gave me a typing test and they said, all right, we have a job at CBS. Basically they pigeonholed all the women into secretarial positions. That's basically what they did. Mm-hmm. So they said to me, just get your foot in the door at CBS and then you can go and move into wherever you want. So that was my first thing. I was like, I'm going to take a job at CBS. I ended up getting a job as an assistant to the former president of CBS. And I thought, all right, that's a big name. His name was Frank Stanton. And I thought, all right, I can parlay that into working in, getting to someplace else. So that was my dream. Was I went in, started working, and basically just doing secretarial work. But I met Walter Cronkite. I met some really interesting people in that position. And then I found my way from there into WCBS TV, working with their editors and their camera people. And my goal there was to jump from there. I wanted to get into 60 Minutes. I wanted to be either a researcher or a writer. So I basically was sort of banging my head against the wall trying to get into that, that area at CBS. And it was just taking too long. I just lost patience with it. And I was willing to kind of look into other options. And at that time, somebody told me they needed an editor over at a trade magazine called Corporate Design. So I went over there, I interviewed, I got the job, and then I, sort of transitioned then into kind of more of what I wanted to do, which was writing for a magazine.
So you started off working in a magazine, and then how did you get into creative agencies, right? Because I was looking at, obviously knowing a lot about you, Sterling Group, Addison, Gerstmann and Myers. I mean, you were working in corporate spaces. When I was working in corporate spaces, mm-hmm. I don't remember there being writers at agencies. They were freelancers going in, but you were working inside. So how did you get from the magazine to the agency? That's interesting.
Well, good question. I loved Corporate Design Magazine. It was a sister magazine of Interior Design. And it gave me a really good insight into writing for business audiences. So that was great. But it didn't pay a lot. So then we got to the time where they started folding magazines. And I could tell that Corporate Design was not financially doing that well. So they had
When was that? I'm sorry. When was that? About what time?
That was in the mid to late 80s.
Really? They were folding in the 80s.
Yeah. It was not a great time. At that time, I think there was such a proliferation of magazines and they were starting to pare them down. So kind of seeing the writing on the wall and realizing too that I was never really going to be able to make a really good income writing for trade magazine. That's when I bailed and went over to work for a PR agency. So
how did you do that though? A lot of people that are writing, they really do struggle with pivoting to something, another. It's like to go from the one thing you've been doing and you know really well to something totally different is challenging, but especially when you're a writer, you know, how do you even make that change? What would you tell to somebody to be able to do that? Because I've pivoted several times in my career. I'm not afraid, though. I'm not afraid.
Right. Well, you can't be afraid, and you always have to. My mantra has always been continuous learning. You mm-hmm. always have to keep learning new skills. I saw that there was more opportunities in PR than there was in journalism. And if you're a good writer, you're a good writer. You could use that writing skill in many, many, many different ways. So it happened that there was a PR agency that they were always pitching me, right? So as a reporter, I was being pitched by them. So then, you know, I would go out to lunch with the president of the agency, and she said, you know, I have a position open, and you know, I want to offer you a job. And at that time, I said, you know what? Let me try PR. Let me see if I can make a better living. She offered me a lot more money. So, and there's nothing wrong with making more money, as we know. So I switched over to doing that, worked for her agency, worked then for Howard Rubenstein. And that's where I really, like, even though it was an awful agency to work for, as far as the environment goes, I learned a tremendous amount.
Yeah. So you just kind of, that was when everything, that's when you really went all in then. I mean, you were sort of,
yeah,
you just sort of, yeah, that was I when you started going corporate all the way out.
Okay. I started going corporate, learned a lot, really what I needed to know, then realized that I didn't love working in the big agencies. And I decided I wanted to work in-house. So basically, all those agencies you just mentioned to me, they were like one of the larger size. And at that time, they basically had an in-house PR department. Mm-hmm. So they hired me to head up their in-house PR department. So I did that at Gerstmann and Myers until they were acquired by Interbrand and Omnicom. Switched over there and worked at Addison.
Addison was like, they were like big time Anna Report design company. I mean, yes. they were like the number one award winning everything. They were getting all the big gigs. I remember looking at their work thinking, man, that would be so great to work there. I want to ask you, you know, so you've been in PR the entire time. You really haven't changed. I would love to know what you think the difference is between marketing writing, social media writing, and public relations writing, because I do feel like there's so much overlap now that I have trouble sometimes distinguishing between the three things.
Well, yes, it's, you have to be able to do all of it. The whole point is, the most important thing about any of this type of writing is knowing who your audience is and giving them what they want and need. So it's more about, I always follow this mantra that I learned years ago, so what, who cares, what's in it for me? And it's as relevant today as it was back then. It's basically, if you're doing writing for marketing, who's your audience? What is it? What do they need to know? Right? What are they grappling with? What are their challenges, and how could you help them? And that goes for anything. That goes for public relations. When I'm talking to a reporter, I need to know what it is that they are looking for, and how could I give that to them? And how could I write in a way that gives them what they need? So that's really, I think, the key, whether it's social media writing, whether it's marketing writing, whether it's PR writing. It's just really, it's kind of like any good storyteller is how I look at it. How do you identify the obstacles and challenges that are facing them and show that you can provide solutions? And if you're a good writer, you map it out that way.
Yeah, you know, I love, you know, following you on LinkedIn, because you are able to marry those three things on LinkedIn really well, and you're excellent with engagement. And I think that some PR people, I notice, I don't understand this. They seem to know the differences the way you described it, but they're not using the tools effectively. They're not engaging on social. They're not representing their brand really well on social media, I kind of feel like they hide too much in the background. And I think when you hide a lot in the background on social, especially when you're in public relations, I just don't even know how clients can hire you if they're not seeing you out there, you know, speaking and talking and seeing your writing style. You know, if of all the careers in the world, you know, being in PR, everybody in PR should be doing an extraordinary volume of writing online.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, it's only been maybe the last maybe 3 years or so that I've really put myself out there more. I think PR people do struggle with that. I think that they feel like they need to be in the background, that they need to just take on the personality of their clients. And you know, that's not that you don't do that, right? I mean, when you're pitching a client, you're putting them in front of the camera, so to speak, right? And you're sort of in the background, but you have to be able to prepare them. So how will they know if you can prepare them if you don't understand? And especially the niche that we're in with creative agencies, that's very specialized. I chose specifically to specialize in this niche because I love it and I understand it. And I've developed the relationships with the reporters that are writing about it. And that's really, really, really important. And I need to get that message out to folks within our industry that if you're looking for somebody to help you get your name out there and build your thought leadership, as we did, as you and I did together, you need somebody who knows your industry. And I need to be able to prove that to them. And I think I prove it to them by utilizing those channels like LinkedIn.
Yeah, you do. You know, the other thing that's really wonderful about working with you, Judy, you have high emotional intelligence. And I wonder, and I know some people are like, well, what is emotional intelligence? And I don't want to get into defining it. But do you feel that emotional intelligence is something that is a critical skill to have when you're a PR agency or a PR person? Like, do you feel like you have to have empathy and things like that? Or can you just really be sort of, you know, sterile and kind of not connected? I'm serious. I mean, I really wonder because I feel like I don't think you would have gotten the best out of me if you didn't have that for me personally.
That's a very interesting insight. I guess I've always been an empathetic person. So it only makes sense that I think that we can't really separate our personal from our professional in many ways. So I think that just inherently being empathetic, and I think it also enables me to, I need to get to know my clients really well. Like, I need them to trust me, and I need to get to know them like really, 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 really well, so I know how to best present them to the outside world. So I think that that does help. And I think that one of the most important skills as a PR person is to listen more and talk less. So I think listening is a skill that has really been overlooked for many people in PR.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I always feel like when I work with you that you really deeply understand my problems. I think you are a great listener. And you're able to sort of take some of my challenges and, convert them to things that make sense for my brand and to put them in places that make sense to execute, you know, from a public relations standpoint. So I feel like I think you're unique. I haven't met a lot of people that can actually do all those things together. And if there are people out there doing what you're doing, again, they're hiding in the background. You really can't find them. So I'm really curious. I'm just kind of getting into some tactics because you have some really strong tactics. I want to know, and everybody always wants to know, what are your top three rules to get PR for a company? Number one being hire Judy.
That's a good one.
But what's the other? What are the other two?
Well, I think for every client I've worked for, first of all, I always tell them they have to establish a point of difference, right? And you were really, really good about that. That's what really kind of drew me to working with you, honestly, because most creative agencies out there make the biggest mistake is they say, well, we are the best creative and strategic agency out there. No, you're not. Okay, you're not. So that was one of the first things I always said to folks is like, what's your point of difference? And they usually look at you with this blank stare going, well, we're the best creatively and strategically. Nobody else offers this. And I'm like, no, everybody does. So what makes you unique? Find out what's your point of difference and who your ideal clients are. That's why I can work with several different types of creative agencies, because each one has a different target of their ideal client, right? So that gets them in front of different audiences. And then determine what challenges they're facing, what's keeping them up at night, and then what story and stories can you share that address what your audience cares about. So then the rule, number one rule is put yourself out there in front of the right audience.
I love it. How does somebody... I mean, I know how I found you, right? I made a phone call. But generally speaking, people do have trouble finding trusted, experienced PR professionals. Like, how do you go about finding somebody to help your brand or your business or your individual efforts, right? And I guess I want to just, I'm not asking, like, how does Coca-Cola find a PR professional? I mean, I'm really asking for the people that are in my audience. You know, which are mid-market leaders, entrepreneurs, people like that. What do they need to do?
First of all, and what you did, which was perfect, you need a PR agency that knows your industry. I have had so many clients come to me and they said, I hired an agency, they were generalists, they couldn't get me anything, they didn't give me the results. Like, of course they didn't, because they don't know your industry. They don't know the publications. They don't have relationships with the reporters that you need to reach. So they have to have established media contacts in the space that you're in. And they're not afraid to push back on and offer you really sound counsel, right? How many times have I pushed back on you and said, Ginger, you can't have an article that's 3,000 words, okay?
Let's cut that down to 8. I love writing. Come on now.
I know you do. I know.
I like to write.
I know, because you have to trust, in other words, like I said, you have to trust them. So you have to be able to realize that the PR person's going to give you sound, honest counsel and not afraid to push back. So many times I've reached out and I've basically honestly told people, your positioning statement isn't setting you apart. Your marketing materials are dated or they're not a good quality. The story you want me to pitch is not newsworthy, right? Great. You're having a 10-year anniversary. Wonderful. Who cares? Nobody cares. Okay. So you have to be able to say, no, I'm not going to pitch that story. It's not newsworthy. Nobody's going to pick it up. If you're not media trained, you need to be media trained to get quoted successfully. And you have to be able to listen if someone says your point of view is just not inspiring. Mm-hmm. It's just not differentiating you and it's not inspiring. So that establishes a really open and honest relationship. And that's what I insist that I have with my clients, because they need to respect what I know what I can do. And I need to be able to listen to them, find those stories, find those nuggets that they may not think are really stories, and bring them to the surface and get them out there.
Yeah, you know, what I loved about working with you, what I love about working with you now, you are honest and you do push back. And I feel that I mean, even though I do PR in some ways at my agency, Burt Creative, and, you know, my podcast here, the Honest Field Guide podcast is, you know, a little bit of PR as well. I'm not a PR professional, you know, I'm not trained in it. So sometimes the things I think would make sense really would not make sense to someone that knows what they're doing. And I love that you would come back to me and say, this isn't good enough. It's not going to work. And I'm like, oh shoot. Okay. And I just, you know, I trusted you when you told me that. You know, I want to ask you a couple other quick questions to wrap this up. This has been so great. And there's so much more people can learn. You know, you've got to look for Judy on LinkedIn, and I'll put her links in the show notes and her website as well, so you can kind of see what's going on here with her company. But I want to talk really quickly about generative AI, because it's interrupting and interfering with our space and our business. business and our careers and our thoughts and everything. I just remember we were at the Fast Company Innovation Festival last year, and I had an opportunity to hang out with Diane von Furstenberg. And I had asked her a question like, you know, what would you tell a young aspiring designer about enrolling in fashion school in the age of AI right now? And you know what she said? She said, wait a while. Wait, watch,
really
listen and learn. I feel like she wasn't like, oh, yeah, go to school. She's like, just stand back a little bit because this is getting crazy. And she didn't say getting crazy. I am paraphrasing her. This is not a direct quote. So I'm just wondering for what you're doing, and I'm sure you've got to be using some AI, but what's your vibe around the AI? Do you feel like it's a threat to, you know, your business?
No, okay. Not at all. Honestly, I have made it point because I do believe that you always are constantly have to learn the new tools.
Yep.
You can't ignore them. And I have found, and I will say also, I don't feel AI is threatening. AI, there will never be a substitute for human creativity, whether it's in your creative space or in my PR space, right? So we have to utilize these tools properly. I utilize them. I mean, it's great for like generating, give me 10 different headlines for this press release, or I need a different subject line, or just like as a creative tool, but it's never going to give you that finished product. You have to employ your own creativity, your own writing skills. So it's really just, again, I just feel like people need to stop being so scared by it. I mean, I understand what the fears are, but I don't embrace those fears. I embrace how I could use it to help me do my work better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I always feel about it.
I think that the one place that jumps out at me is that there's people that believe that they can do PR now because they have these tools. You know, like they can just pop out a press release, or, you know, they can, you know, put together, you know, RFPs, or they can write, you know, blah articles and get them out there because nobody will know the difference. And, you know, I'm noticing myself, and of course, I'm not a normal audience person. I can tell when it is written by machines versus a person. I can hear a voice that sounds very robotic when I'm reading. But maybe most people don't care. And I feel like that might be the threat, not necessarily from the threat might be coming from a person that believes they don't need to hire Burt Creative, right? Or you for any type of work because they can just use this, you know, this helper, this digital helper.
Well, and those are not the clients that I want.
I love that answer, girl. Right? I love that answer. Let's go with it. Let's just go. I mean, that's it. Mic drop.
I really don't. I mean, why would you want to work with somebody that thinks that they can? Again, it's not. There's no substitute for the relationship building. There's no substitute for the human creativity. There's, you know, you want to get the best out of you know, what you're looking to do. Then, you know, if you don't want that, then I don't want to work with you.
I love it. This is why this is why you are so amazing. So listen, I loved this conversation. I want to talk to you more because you have so much to share, but I'm not going to give away all your secrets, Judy. People need to hire you. People need to hire you, right? I mean, that's what needs to happen. So I do have some rapid fire questions for you. I love to ask like these sort of like things. And okay, so are you ready for my rapid fire? Can you handle it?
I will try.
All right. So, okay. I want to know what's on your music playlist that's not Bruce Springsteen. Because you know he's our favorite. I know it's not fair.
It's not fair. I just came back from LA and I saw two of his concerts in LA with my daughter because I raised her right. She understands the power of Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Again, he's a storyteller. I love storytellers. Mm-hmm. So my music playlist is, I would say, I have a lot of varied loves, but classic rock is really where that's like 80% of my playlist. Classic rock, a little new wave, you know, there's just no substitute for it. They just, you know, but I will dive a little bit into Miley Cyrus and some of the other, you know, not a Swiftie, but I respect
the Swifties.
Her music.
Don't diss the Swifties. Oh God.
I don't
want people coming after me on my show.
No, I respect her.
So are you wine or are you cocktails, classic cocktails? Which one?
More wine. Definitely wine.
Okay, yeah. I'm a classic cocktail right now. Yeah. Yeah, I might have one actually for lunch today. Exactly. And what was a book that you read recently that's not a business book?
I think I'm in the middle now working on Lessons in Chemistry.
Oh.
Which I love.
Like as in like what kind of chemistry? Like human chemistry?
No, it's Lessons in Chemistry.
Man, woman chemistry.
You got to read this book.
Okay.
I love
the cover. The cover design is really cool. Okay.
Yeah. This is really a book about.
Yeah, put it in the front. Put it in front of you because you have a blurry thing. Oh, there we go. Got it. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. This is a great book. There's a whole TV series, mini series on it. But it's really about female empowerment in the 60s. An incredibly smart scientist, chemist, who basically was told she just needed to be a secretary, but she turns it. It's fascinating.
I love it. She needed to be a secretary. I mean, is there any reason why you're reading that? I mean, it's kind of like, I think it's like full circle.
Yeah, well, it's a New York Times bestseller. It's on the list. Everybody kept telling me to read it. I started watching the series and I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. But everybody said, but the book is better. The book is better. So I said, the book is always better. Okay, so I'm going to go back and I'm going to read the book. So that's what I'm doing before I do it. And then I had just finished reading The Sympathizer, which was one of your recommendations.
Oh, yes. Viet, my favorite, Viet Nguyen. His show is on, HBO Max now, right? They made a series out of Sympathizer. And I'm a binge watcher. So I haven't been watching one episode after another. I'm waiting until the last one comes out, which I think is this Sunday, and then I'm going to watch them all straight through. But yeah, Viet is amazing. And I'm so excited for him, and I'm excited about him, and I'm very proud that he is been steadfast in his thoughts around all kinds of things. He's a rebel, and he's also mm-hmm. a conscientious objector. So his book was very interesting to me. It was a very hard read for me. I mean, it's a Pulitzer Prize winning book. It's not a trash novel. So you can't just be like, let's get through this book. It's like you really have to. It just really brings you through a lot of beautiful things. I'm actually reading Incite Joy right now. That's what I'm reading, and it's kind of a sad book. Have you heard of Incite Joy? Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Who wrote that?
Ross Gay.
Who's the author?
Ross Gay. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's starting off really sad, and we'll see what happens, which makes no sense to me, Inciting Joy, and then it starts off sad. But anyway, maybe we need to have another conversation around books, how we should do that.
Absolutely.
First, don't you think? All right, well, listen.
I do.
Judy, this has been fantastic. I hope everybody, enjoyed this conversation. Judy is one of my favorite people in the entire world. She's had a tremendous impact, like I said, on my business. And if you need a real high-level veteran public relations person that has an extraordinary amount of knowledge, Judy's the one. You have to work with Judy Calvin. So I'm really excited that I had you on my show finally, thank you. So I hope everybody comes back next time for my next episode on the Honest Feel Guide podcast. This has been great. Really happy that you're here. I'm Jinja.
I'm Judy.
We'll talk to you next time.
The Honest Feel Guide is produced by the team at Burt Creative, where brand and multi-channel strategies are designed to help you get attention, grow, scale, and keep up with the pace of change. The music on the podcast is written and performed by Utah Carroll. You can find their songs everywhere online to buy or stream. The opinions expressed on the Honest Feel Guide are solely those of the hosts and guests.